welcome to episode 3 of the second season of Overlooked and Undercooked, featuring myself, Tim Bear, himself, Guy Montgomery, and introducing the wickedly talented Carlo Ritchie.
Hey, good morning, or good afternoon, or whichever it is that you happen to be listening to this in, I suppose.
Well, to me right now, it's a very fine afternoon. We've just watched the third episode of Real Rob, called The Best Playdate Ever. And you're our first returning customer, Carlo. Is it good to be back amongst the Schneiders?
It's good. A lot of the threads that I've been, you know, dwelling on for a while, it's good to just see them starting to get wrapped up and just to get a bit more of a sense of the world of Real Rob.
I mean, yeah, Lord knows how you've resisted the overwhelming urge to continue watching this serialized program as you watch the story unfurl over two seasons.
Avoiding the spoilers has been the hardest part of it all.
There's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of buzz around this.
Yeah, big time, big time.
So just for anyone listening along who for whatever reasons decided not to watch this show along with us, could you maybe outline the basic narrative or plot of episode 3 of season 2 of Real Rob?
Well, episode 3 begins, as I imagine so many of the episodes start, because they certainly all seem to end there, in the household bed of the Schneiders. They have a plan to take their daughter, whose name I can't think of, starts with an M.
Miranda.
Sure. Down, she's going to school first day at an organic school.
Yeah, to the credit of the show, this is one of the first times there has been any through line between episodes. So we saw them trying to find an appropriate school for her to go to in the previous episode, and they've set her on this very expensive. It's called Hope.
Hope. Yeah. And it's good to. It's good to see that it was set up, you know, because it certainly had a real payoff in this season, this episode. We go to the school. At the school, Rob sees the guitarist for Paul McCartney, and that becomes quite a important detail of this episode, as well as that he has to clean out the shed and sell some Tibetan furniture, which is quite precious to him. Let me tell
Isn't
you.
It's crazy because they do their best to do these sort of ABC storylines where it's like, this is what we're following and this is what we're not. But they've got no understanding of what that... They're like, well, yeah, this and then also this. There's no rhyme or reason to any of it. They're just like, we just have two things happening at once. That's a show, right?
It's like going, how do you make a cake? Well, I know that there's six ingredients. So if we get six objects and put them in a bowl and then put that in an oven, we'll
get
a cake.
Exactly.
A delicious treat.
But it isn't. It turns out it's just a hot mess.
Yeah, I do like the idea that Rob Schneider is an aficionado of 17th century Tibetan furniture, because I think that's an area that is ripe for comedy and hasn't been mined deep enough.
It's a fun area to play with, isn't it? And we get introduced to one of the thousands of guest stars, Bobby Lee, in this episode.
Mm. Yeah, Asian American comedian Bobby Lee, who does not in any way have a sort of an Asian accent.
I think he was born in America.
But obviously in this Rob Schneider vehicle has been sort of told to just maybe ham it up a little bit. Could we Asian it up a bit, Bobby Lee?
Mm.
And so playing the role of, I don't know, you know, where the accent is meant to derive from, but playing the role of sort of this, you know, wizened antique dealer. And some of the best physical comedy I've seen in the last 30 minutes, actually.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that coming back, you know, just wrapping it all around. I hope that Rob licks more things.
While Rob is purportedly into Tibetan furniture, as with many of his harebrained schemes, it's revealed he's only got a cursory understanding. Is in fact the chest of drawers, the ancient Tibetan chest of drawers he's trying to get $10,000 for, is not what it may seem to be an antique. It's a very good replica.
It's a fake.
Yeah,
it's a fake, ladies and gentlemen, that he paid $3,000 for.
Valueless, though.
Valueless.
Valueless.
That without value has no... Oh, wait, no, that's not how it goes. Fuck. Dang it.
Kids these days, they know the cost of everything and the value of nothing.
That's well said. Maybe this podcast will really teach them a lesson, bring them down a peg.
Bobby Lee gives Rob a brief moment of hope, and it's kind of a beautiful moment to see it die in his eyes, because he says this is a fantastic example of this era of furniture and... It's probably worth $10,000. And then he proceeds to lick the top of it, and he says, yep, it's a good replica.
Yeah, because he can taste the replica oil that's in used. It's car oil or
something. What did they keep saying? Because he said it was car wax, and then what was fat or something?
Yak fat.
Yak fat, okay.
And it was funny. They said it enough. you know those gags where someone will do something and it will be very funny, and then they'll keep doing it and it will stop being funny, and then they'll keep doing it again and it will become funny?
Yeah.
This is kind of like that, where they started doing it and it wasn't initially funny, and then they kept going and it wasn't funny again.
Mm. It sounds then, like us,
and then
doesn't it?
It kept going, and it still wasn't funny.
Yeah, it was really worth it, that whole scene. And I think they should have just stayed in it.
I think as soon as you start measuring the scenes on the value in terms of what they contribute to the broader story, that's when the show starts falling apart.
Well, it falls here and there.
You know, the thing is, like this show, I mean, the whole episodes are rubbish, but the individual scenes are also rubbish. So, you know, like, you could, if you break it down, you
there's
can
a consistency
just really,
there, isn't there? Yeah. There's a beautiful symmetry to how everything sucks in this.
We are in the third episode of the season now, and they have abandoned, seemingly still, all of the interstitials that kind of made it enjoyable. The parts that, you know, that where Rob Schneider was really working out what show he wanted to make, which was the stand-up on the soundstage, the sort of Kardashian-style down-the-barrel-of-the-camera moments. Like, those are respite from the unrelenting nature of this piss-poor storytelling. And without it, you're just in this world, like, confused. I was confused. I was coming in and out a little bit. And so, like, I'd be like, oh, that's right. I'm in a hotel room with Carlo and Tim watching Real Rob.
Yeah, we've actually just moved for this episode. We were at 34 stories in the air before.
You moved hotel rooms.
Yeah, we were in an apartment.
Booking them by the hour.
Rooms by the hour. We want to do an episode with a new comedian and a new hotel room every year.
The hotel doesn't know you're here.
So in this episode, as Carlo said, we've got Dusty Lane, who is a fictional character who in this series is Sir Paul McCartney's guitarist. Well, I'm assuming he's fictional, which seems dicey on the front of, like, just because of how central he is to the story. It seems like almost defamation on Paul McCartney to drag his reputation into this show and talk about it so much and have it as such a central storyline. And the actor portraying one, Dusty Lane, is a man called Steve Cook, who I just looked up, and he's an actor, director, writer, and musician. And we went on his website, and he talks a lot about his quote-unquote early years in England and a lot about Liverpool, but he has the broadest New Zealand accent I think I have heard on the tally in like an American production. It just cuts like a knife.
Mm.
And he's a New Zealand denier, is what he is. He's a self-hating Kiwi.
So another added element for you guys to just really take out from this show, you know, just one of those things to really dig your teeth into.
Just something to chew on.
It was unmissable, wasn't it? And it was crazy because you do expect a Liverpudlian accent. Not necessarily Liverpudlian, but he's Paul McCartney's guitarist. You assume you've got a Brit.
Yeah.
I can't help but feel that because he denies that New Zealand heritage and just lists Liverpool, that perhaps this was a casting failure. And that they were like, well, this guy is from Liverpool. He's an actor. That'll be perfect for a guy playing McCartney's guitarist.
You may be suggesting this in jest, but I really believe that's
possible. No, I reckon Rob Schneider is like, oh, yeah, this is what a Liverpudlian sounds like.
Fuck, I reckon you're right. Because if you go on his website, this is on the front page that he's been in Real Rob. So, yeah, you know,
this is his big
not
break.
Going great.
Well, yeah, because otherwise the alternative is he is a genuine Liverpudlian who decided to play this character in the Real Rob franchise as a New Zealander.
I like that.
This is like actor who can barely get a job has such a good New Zealand accent up their sleeve. They've thrown us all for a loop.
Fucking Steve. There's a beautiful scene in this episode where we're at the kids' party. And it's got very joyous music. It's sort of like a little montage, isn't it, Carlo?
Yeah, it's a great fun time for the kids. This is actually I had a real laugh in this scene.
Yes, we all did. We gave this scene a beat in it, a round of applause as a collective, which I can assure you is a first here at Overlooked and Undercooked.
Because there is something very funny about it. Go and check out. There's a surprise in the pool, and there being a dolphin.
there's a false business called Dolphin to Door, and they deliver dolphins that perform in pools to kids' birthday parties. you see the dolphin being taken away in the back of a van, and they've just filled up the back of the van with water.
It's good. It's a good gag, and they did it all. You know, like the effects, they're not flawless, but it's good enough. You see the joke, you see what they're doing. It's good.
This is also a scene where I just think that if Rob Schneider had slightly more knowledge of the world that was, yeah, there could have just been a much better plot line for this very scene. Like, you've got a dolphin in chlorinated water, presumably. There could have just been a very fun montage of kids having fun with a dolphin desperately jumping out of the water and the jumps becoming less and less, and then kids crying around a dead dolphin.
Well, and the reason they did that is it's not because they're shying away from the dark stuff. Like, this show does tread some pretty, you know, dicey territory. It's just because he doesn't have the comedic faculty to imagine that scene.
Like, yeah. He just said, well, there's a dolphin in the pool. That's fine.
Funny, though. He did good.
Fuck, yeah, wouldn't you love to be in the writer's room? Not contributing, not visible, just to see the process in action.
Yeah.
There's the episode ends the same way the last episode that I watched of this ends, with them in bed.
Yeah.
And that seems to be like every scene with the two of them is in the bed. Like, there's one scene in this when they're kind of elsewhere, but it just seems to be most of the scenes of them in bed. It's like, this is your real wife. Like, surely you guys do other stuff in your lives. Like, yeah, spend place time in other locations. Put something other than the bed, you know?
It is very boring. It's like they've tried to go with the Married with Children style sitcom, but it's weird to do that on a Netflix series that where you've only got like 8 episodes. Because in TV, you get it's like every week they've got to bang out another episode, and you've got to have like the sound stages all together in the same place so you can, you know, do that. But this is like, you know, people went out and made this all at once so that they could whack it up on Netflix later. It's not like they're in perpetuity making an episode a week.
This just reeks of the Schneider. It's just like, the more you watch, the more unbreakable the idea in my mind is that Rob Schneider, his wife Patricia, and Jamie, they made this show entirely insulated from anyone, from Netflix's creative people, just them on whatever, you know, like, they have a soundstage where they're putting this together.
I think it's their house at this point. I really think we're just watching this shit happen inside of their house. Like, this is getting increasingly autobiographical in a very real sense, like in a documentary sense. He's dialing up a lot of the violence because that's the only trigger he knows for comedy, I think.
Yes.
So there's big things on hurting people. But the thing with the kids' party is that at the start, that sequence, Patricia's there and Jamie's there as well, and Jamie brings in some puppies for the girls because it's a birthday party, and there's an Elsa lookalike princess. Everyone's having a fucking fabulous time, a famous time together. Happy music's playing, there's candy, it's bright and colourful, it's great. And it's like, this is a vision of a world in this show without Rob Schneider in it. Yeah. This is the lives we all could be leading if Rob had never visited us.
It would be a happier show if Patricia and Jamie realized that they are in love and broke away.
Yeah.
And then, like, you'd have fun because we could follow the narrative of a broken Rob Schneider. Yes. Instead of just like, it's driving me nuts that there's no consequence to his actions. Like, I would love to see the world come down on Rob. And like, all the people who he's hurt or made life difficult for around him, put the pieces together and build a beautiful life, and he's just this downtrodden. Like, which is, if you watch interviews of him with the Happy Madison crew, that is his role in real life.
What do you mean? That he gets shit on?
He's the put upon guy. He's their lackey.
Mm. Oh man, there's I think we talked about this last season, but that interview where like 6 of them are on Conan.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It's fucking brutal. You've ever seen
that? I've not seen that, no.
Schneider's just trying to get like a joke in, and he's almost to the point where he's raising his hand like a school child at the back, and they finally give him a chance to throw a quip in, and it fucking dies on its ass. It makes you want to cry. It really does.
And that man got a television series that has 2 seasons.
And a third on the way, Carlo.
No,
it does. Coming out this year.
Why do you do it to yourselves, guys? Like, this is just like, my partner just got into town, and I'm here in a hotel room going through this. I just think, you've got, like, I've got, this is an hour out of my life. You've got 16 hours gone and another 8 on the way. Oh.
Hey, fuck you, Carlo.
Nah, I'm with you, Carlo, man.
Nah,
we make these decisions. Like, if this show's so bad that Rob Schneider made it for no one, why have we put our hands up and said, no, actually, Rob, you've made it for us?
Because that's art, man. Sometimes art is finding your way through and things deserve analysis and critique when they're put on the world. And
not everything.
If you're putting a show on Netflix, we're allowed to watch it without guilt or fear of retribution from Carlo Ritchie that we're wasting our time. There is value in observing an oddity that has made itself its way on this platform.
I'm not saying that you're wasting your time, Tim. I feel like this is time well spent. But I just feel that two such funny and creative people, you could be writing another show in this time, you know? You just,
there's literally, there's no denying what you're saying.
Yeah, that cuts like a knife, that last bit, actually. It's no good.
Look, this is, you know, you're creating great stuff.
Consider this to be a very roundabout research mission, wherein instead of discovering how to write a show, first one must know how not to write a show.
We must know everything about how to not write a show.
Well, fools, I respect you guys. I respect you guys so much in...
The more compliments you rain down on us, the more facetious they seem to sound.
If I think Patricia and Jamie were to get together, I actually think they'd be kind of a perfect pair in a way. Because I think that Jamie is... He shows himself to be loyal above everything else.
It's true.
He's potentially unkillable.
He's a fembot.
I think he might possibly be immortal.
He did fall today from quite a significant height and land on his head. And then just wake up a few hours later with a sore neck.
So far this season, he's been crushed by a dressing cabinet that's like two people high,
2 meters
down a stairwell. He's been bitten by a very poisonous spider that's remained entirely untreated.
Yeah, he's had a lot of needles jabbed into he's
been
objects.
Suffocated to the point of almost death, that he had his life flash before his eyes. And every episode he bounces back and says, "Hey, Jamie, reporting for work."
Yeah. So, and Patricia, like, she is good at sort of giving Rob the tasks, you know? Like, she's good at wrangling. And Rob's just really shit at doing the tasks. But I think Jamie would just be like, "Cool, here's what I'm doing today." And he wouldn't put up any resistance. He'd just be like, "Great, I don't have to think.
To follow that narrative that he's a potential immortal, I will point out this, in that in the scene before the dolphin, he goes, "Oh yep," and goes off stage. There's like this sort of strange thing that's set up where she's like, "Oh, you need to get some extra stuff for the party." He looks at his phone, he's like, "Yeah, I got it sorted." That never comes back. Just before the dolphin appears, he goes off.
Yeah.
And then he's not in the dolphin scene.
No, he's not.
So maybe he's the dolphin, guys.
You think he's a shapeshifter?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you think... Okay, let me put this out there. Do you think that Jamie is an immortal and he's lived for so many thousands of years that he's discovered the only true happiness there is absolute service to others? And he's found an employer...
He's putting his body on the line.
Yeah, he's found like the world's worst boss because he believes that it will be the most virtuous version of living in service of other people.
It's kind of like the Groundhog Day situation, in which that once he can sort of better himself through... Like, he's probably done some terrible things in his life of immortality.
Yeah, he must have killed countless people.
And now he's thinking, I'm just going to take it. I'm just going to get absolutely shat on for the rest of my life.
Do you think
this person's life,
is it self-flagellation so that he can better himself, or do you think there is some sort of cosmic force that will allow him to relinquish?
Do you know what it is? It's the knowledge that if he does not step into this void held by Rob Schneider, that someone else will, and that he's the only person with the physical and mental capacity to withstand his relentless bullying and company.
That is so good, guy. Fuck, that's good. So he's human shielding himself in the place of another person.
He's jumping on the grenade that is Rob Schneider to prevent any of the shrapnel or explosion touching the rest of the ears of civilization. Yeah. And he can't protect everyone. You saw Dusty Lane, you know, he gets caught up in the orbit of Schneider.
There's collateral damage, but he is minimizing it. And I think that it's a little too convenient that the world's most thoughtless and cruel man, Rob Schneider, and kind of a dummy as well, has been teamed up with a PA who could not be killed. So I think that does add to the fact that there is some sort of mystical property Jamie found him.
I think we've cracked it. And I would say that, you know, there's probably this added element to it that, you know, there is this... We had this element of the 17th century Tibetan furniture added in today.
Yeah.
And Jamie, early in the episode, showed a complete... sense of he had no respect for that object. he trod right on it.
Well, it's I mean, it could be a day old to him, you know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
He
could have
just been picked up from Kmart.
Aren't we but ants dancing upon the globe to old Jamie?
Angels on the head of a pin.
Can I talk about the fact that amongst all of the junk that's being kept in the garage, Rob Schneider stumbles upon a script for Juice Bigelow, African Gigolo, and is seen reading it in not one but two scenes. And the second time he's reading it, he is laughing to himself on the last page and says, it still holds up. That is insane. Is that an advertisement? Is he trying to float that to anyone who's watching it that he does have a spec for African Gigolo?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
100 times yes. And he doesn't as well, by the way, because he hasn't done the work. But if anyone shows any kind of interest, he will get Jamie to write it for him. Because
mm-hmm.
I do think that those elements of his self-centeredness and giving all of the shit jobs to Jamie, I think that's real. I think that is that's a real mirroring of what is happening in the real world.
We outlined earlier in the season, the creative process is Rob Schneider tells stories to his wife and Jamie in the writer's room. And then all of a sudden, the episodes are made. That was Rob Schneider's articulation of the creative process. So Jamie does have, Jamie's inserted in this, this nobles mythic storyline for himself.
Mm. Yeah.
He's in how put upon the character is, he is representing how put upon he feels in real life.
Mm.
It also he's self-aware beyond writing it. He's self-aware enough to have described his acting performance in this series as the worst thing he's ever done.
It's amazing that he kept making it, eh?
Wait, who? Rob Schneider has said that?
No, his assistant.
Jamie has said that, yeah.
Jamie said that of his own performance in this show. And that was in season one, and there's going
to
be three.
That's just your classic trying to get out ahead of the story sort of play.
He's probably the strongest actor in this, in the three of the three of them.
I don't think Rob Schneider's a terrible actor in this.
I
think his character's deplorable and the writing is just fucking baffling. But I don't think his acting is the worst.
I don't know. Like, I just don't think he can sell anything that he says. Like,
really,
he has that blow up today at Jamie, and it's like it reads like it was written. It's like, I don't see this from you. I didn't see this coming. I didn't see any fury building up to this moment.
Can you imagine being on set watching Rob Schneider direct himself on his own lines and not being able to say anything because he's in charge?
Yeah, it would be
great, Rob. And then you go home with him after watching him flail on set for a day because you're his wife, and she goes, "Hey, that was a good day at work, wasn't it?" "Yeah, Rob. Yeah, it was great."
"Oh, you're right. I forgot about that. Oh shit. That sucks."
Yeah.
The fact that they, oh man, I want to know more about Patricia in real life. I want real Patricia.
Well, it's easy, the thing is, it's easy to want to feel sympathy because it does, feel like she's trapped in this world or in this marriage.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time when she's given enough screen time to voice her own opinions or views, she is, running a not too distant second to Rob in terms of being an absolute piece of shit.
That's true.
She's not a redeemable character. She's also bad news.
She's less bad, but it's a high bar.
You go, Tim.
Well, I was just going to say, because this does bear mentioning, because I was positively aghast when it happened. Jamie walks over the Tibetan table, the fucking dresser thing, when they're moving stuff around. Rob Schneider calls him a cunt.
Yes. Out of nowhere.
I don't think I've ever heard that on a Netflix show before. Which also kind of makes me wonder, is anyone screening these episodes before they're going up?
They're all definitely their first draft, and it's being just made and just put on the telly.
But does anyone from Netflix go, because usually with
ratings, they trust Rob. They trust
Rob. Yeah, they do. That's the problem.
I landed in a very similar situation when I used to host Fail Army on TV3 in New Zealand, and they were like, "You guys just go away, you make this show." And we knew that no one was quality controlling them.
Yeah. Wasn't there a retake that made it to air once? Like a mistake?
Yeah, there was one time we were doing a voiceover for a clip and we were like, "Hey, stop, can we take that again?" And that went to air. And it's exactly the same situation.
Don't plug the mic, Carl. I want to hear you laugh about this.
No, of course, you assume, you know, at higher levels, you assume that there are people checking all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But there are idiots in every job. Like, yeah. there's people who are doing the...
Well, they're just not there. The barrier that you thought was there doesn't exist.
And they're sitting back there and they go, I mean, the show is really struggling. It's not doing well critically, but there's someone just watching it in the Antipodes. It's just, like, if we can just be cutting through down there.
Australian hotel room.
It's going to blow up.
Well, I found in one of the news articles I read, I found three embedded tweets. That's three tweets from people asking for a third season of Real Rob, and none of them were from Tim and I. So consider ourselves part of a party of five.
Real accounts?
I mean, I didn't research the accounts, but presumably real accounts run by real idiots.
Do you think, and I don't know if you've, do you think that Rob Schneider may have listened to the first season of Overcooked and has put in a New Zealand character? This is a little nod. Just as a little nod. Like, well, I'm watching and look at this.
Almost. But the only... I mean, we'll know when season three hits these shores, because the only flaw in that timeline is that season two of this show was still made in 2017. Season one of Overlooked and Undercooked was released in 2018.
Yeah. Well... Well, that puts a pin in that one.
I would love so much for that to be.
I wouldn't be surprised if you listened to it. He strikes me as... Really?
Dude, he's created a production company and wrapped himself around the fucking dumbest people he can find who can actually get a TV show across the line finished and completed because his ego is so delicate. He's not going to seek out any critique or review of his work. It's not congruent with what we're seeing on screen.
But he would punch his own name into Twitter and see what's being written. People talk about the podcast.
It would tear him apart. It would fucking tear him apart. I don't think a lot of people know about this podcast.
Maybe he'd listen to it and be like, finally, someone actually gets what I was trying. I was trying to bring down Netflix from the inside. I'm just trying to show them that a celebrity and a name can make anything in this world, and the real artists are getting overlooked.
Give him every Oscar.
Yeah.
You know, that would be so good. That is Kafka-esque, isn't it?
Well, I mean, a year on, Carl, what do you think? Do you think we're punching down?
You're definitely not punching down. I mean, like, it's Rob Schneider, you know? Like, he had every opportunity just to... Like, he made millions of dollars, surely, from the projects that he was involved in.
Estimated net worth of $15 million.
He has a net... Like, I mean, that's a guy... He could have just sat back and, like, funded Kickstarters or... done anything he wanted to do in his life. Just
that's where your mind
just went. Like, have a guy, like, if he wanted to stay involved in the creative industry, there were so many other ways that he could have done it. But he decided to write, film and direct his own series, which is fucking rubbish. Like, no way are you punching down. You are punching up to, like, fuck, this guy needs to be brought down. Like,
there is
fuck.
A light in your eyes that I haven't seen before, Carlo. This is conviction. You believe what you're saying right
this
now.
This is the 1%, man, right there. Right on our fucking screen.
Do we need to eat Real Rob? You know, the eat the rich thing. Like, Real Rob is the uninhibited wealth.
Yeah.
You know, he is without... there's no check or balance on Rob Schneider.
He broke a $3,000 wardrobe up with an axe. Like, I don't care if it's not worth $3,000. He spent $3,000 on it. Like, you know, like, you buy a shitty pizza for $20 and you go, fuck, this pizza is shit. You still eat the pizza because you spent $20 on it.
You're goddamn right about that.
He, I don't know, part of me is like, that's his money. If he wants to, if he wants to show us footage of him pissing on a pile of money, you know, across two seasons of Real Rob, so be it.
But this is like the free speech argument, right? Yeah, he's allowed to do it. And yes, I'm allowed to say we should eat him as a result. Yeah. We should kill and cannibalize Rob Schneider.
It's like, it's such a big thing. The two episodes that I have watched have dealt with, like, the power of having a huge amount of money. Like, in the last episode of the first season, he loses everything and he has to, and then they find out, oh, I've got $500,000 in cash. We're going to be sweet. And then now we're three episodes in and it seems like life has just worked out. That $500,000 has just got us back to everything. Yeah. Like, money is not a problem. Like, I can't.
It either should be or it shouldn't be, but they shouldn't dip in and out episode dependent.
Yeah.
But that's absolutely what they do. Like, it's, you know, so much of this is just, is the word incongruent episode. Like, there's no, it doesn't, it's not tethered to reality. They just pluck out of the, out of anywhere. They just pull an idea or, you know, a problem that might exist to them for as long as it's convenient or serves their version of storytelling, which is literally Rob Schneider finding different ways to be an asshole and fuck up his assistant.
Guy's hurt. Listen to him.
I am hurt.
It's funny because when I watch this, it puts me in the mind. It put me into, like, today when I was watching, I was thinking, like, it's almost as if Rob Schneider wanted to create BoJack Horseman in a like a real sense, you know, like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, okay,
what about,
yeah,
if I'm like a super wealthy, no troubles, like asshole who's kind of dealing with fame, but it doesn't have any of the kind of pathos, it doesn't have any of the like self-awareness.
There's no depth, no intelligence to it.
It's just like, I'm an asshole and I'm incredibly rich.
Rob, yeah,
and
yeah,
everything works out.
Yeah, he refuses to think about his behavior.
Yeah.
Or if he does, it's all done off screen. And his conclusion is, I'm all good.
Yeah.
Which is the entire point of shows like BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
Is about going, I am a complete asshole and an utterly flawed character, but I will analyze that periodically.
Yeah. It's terrifying, really. Like,
it is scary, isn't it? It is.
Like, you guys, like, I don't know how you guys are holding it together. Like, you must just be seething with rage.
You can hear how tired we are. We've watched fucking... three episodes of this now.
No, yeah, it's not good.
We're beaten down.
Yeah. We're, I mean, men. When I came in, you were so despondent, guy. Just, we sat down, you didn't even say hello, just you hugged me and then you turned on the television. It's like, yes, let's just deep into this, into the roots of this beast.
Fucking hell. Well, what better place to end it?
The whole day's been spent indoors watching and discussing.
We're not even halfway, guy. Magnum opus.
I worry for you guys, but you know, I do respect you for pushing yourselves through this, because something beautiful will and is coming out of it, you know.
We appreciate you coming on, not once, but twice. You're the guest so nice you came on twice.
Look, I hope to come back and see what Rob gets up to in the third season, you know.
Well, you
time
know,
will tell.
Fingers crossed we all can.
Carlo, where can people find you online? Would you like to plug anything? Who knows when this is coming out? So it better be some evergreen shit.
Just find me on Instagram, or just come swing by Redfern in Sydney. Just look around.
What's your street address?
You'll be at that.
It's
say it. I'll find it. I'll record it.
If you put it in, that'd be great.
You'll find Carlo on Twitter down at the RSA. Or the RSC. What do you call them here?
RSLs.
RSL. Oh.
I think it's different each state, actually.
Okay.
It's RSLs in New South Wales.
But he's at Carlo Ritchie on Instagram. And he's a high-quality follow. He's a high-quality fella.
You got a quote for us, guy, to wrap up the episode?
I'm going
to
make friends with Paul McCartney. I couldn't pull any quotes out of this. I was too angry.